Welcome back, everyone. Ready to dive back into the Farndale family saga.
Always fascinated to see where these old records take us.
Right. Last time we were talking about those early Farndales who actually stayed put, remember? But today, we're switching gears, focusing on the ones who ventured out, took the Farndale name with them.
Ah, so the ones who said, "See you later, Farndale. I'm off to make my mark."
Exactly. And those are the names that pop up in all sorts of unexpected places. We're talking about the 1300s, mind you, not exactly a time of easy travel.
No, not at all. So every journey back then was a bit of an adventure, right?
Absolutely. And you have to wonder, what prompted those early Farndales to pack their bags and head out into the unknown? Was it ambition, circumstance, a thirst for adventure?
Maybe a bit of all of that. Plus, let's not forget, times weren't always easy back then. Plagues, famines, conflicts. Sometimes, moving was a matter of survival.
True enough. Okay, so where do we even begin with these intrepid Farndale travelers? Give us a taste of who we'll be meeting today.
Well, we've got tax records, court documents, even some rather intriguing wills that shed light on these individuals. And trust me, their stories are anything but dull. We'll uncover tales of intrigue, ambition, and maybe even a touch of scandal along the way.
Scandal.
Oh.
Now you've got my attention. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's start with the basics. Who are some of the earliest Farndale travelers we encounter in the records?
Well, one of the first names that pops up is William de Farndale, appearing in a 1301 tax record in Danby.
Danby. That's, what, a good day's ride from Farndale itself?
At least. So clearly William wasn't afraid of a bit of distance, and he wasn't alone either. We've got a John de Farndale who pops up in Egdon, then Rosedale, then back to Farndale for a bit. Seems like he couldn't quite make up his mind.
Restless spirit, maybe? I wonder if he ever settled down.
Who knows? But these early records make one thing clear. Leaving Farndale, for whatever reason, wasn't unheard of.
It's like that saying, the world is your oyster. Though I'm not sure oysters were on the menu back then.
Probably not for most folks. But speaking of menus, we've also got records of an Adam de Farndale involved in some sort of legal dispute. Possibly even a murder.
A murder? Okay, now this deep dive just took a dark turn. Tell me more.
Well, the details are a bit murky, as they often are with these old documents. But it seems this Adam might have been caught up in something rather unsavory.
Intrigue in the Farndale family. I should have known better than to expect anything less. So this Adam, is he our poster child for Farndale ambition gone wrong?
We might need to dig a bit deeper before we go pinning any labels on him. But his story is a reminder that life in the 1300s wasn't all idyllic villages and peaceful plowing.
Right.
There was a darker side of things as well.
True enough. And speaking of darker sides, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the rather unfortunate end met by a certain Walter de Farndale in 1328.
Ah, yes, Walter. Murdered in Caton. Not exactly the kind of ending you'd wish on anyone.
Certainly not. And the timing of his death coincides with those Scottish raids we talked about in a previous episode.
Right, those raids were a constant threat in those parts. Makes you wonder if Walter was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Or if there's something more to it, some deeper story waiting to be uncovered. This is starting to feel like a medieval detective drama.
And we're just getting started. Because next time, we'll be tracing the footsteps of another Walter de Farndale, possibly even the son of our unfortunate murder victim. And this Walter's story, well, it takes us on a journey across England, from quiet parishes to the heart of a war zone.
From a quiet parish to a war zone. Talk about a change of scenery. Well, listeners, you won't want to miss part two of our deep dive, where we'll uncover the incredible journey of Walter de Farndale, the traveling vicar. Stay tuned. Last time, we left off with a bit of a cliffhanger. A murder mystery, actually. Walter de Farndale meeting an untimely end. But today, we're picking up the trail of another Walter, potentially his son.
And this Walter's story is a bit different. Less about murky intrigue, more about ambition, you could say. And definitely about travel.
Yeah, we teased it last time, this whole traveling vicar thing. Sounds almost like a contradiction. I mean, weren't vicars supposed to, you know, stay put in their parishes?
Well, in theory, maybe. But the church hierarchy back then, it was a bit like a ladder, you see. And our Walter, he seemed keen on climbing it.
Makes sense. So climb that ladder he did. Tell me he landed a cushy gig at, like, Westminster Abbey or something.
Not quite Westminster Abbey. But his first appointment, it was Halt Whistle.
Halt Whistle. Rings a bell, vaguely. Remind me.
It's up in Northumberland, pretty far north.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly a bustling metropolis, even by medieval standards. More like sheep outnumber people kind of place.
Okay, so maybe not the most glamorous start. But hey, everyone's going to start somewhere, right?
Oh, right. And for a young vicar, even a small parish was a chance to prove yourself. tend to your flock, as they say.
So what? Sermons about tending sheep and avoiding Scottish raiders.
Ah, could have been. Speaking of raiders, though, that's actually relevant to Walter's next move. He ends up getting an appointment in Lazenby, and that's much closer to the border.
Ah, right. Those Scottish raids were no joke. Talk about a change of pace from quiet halt whistle.
Right. Lazenby, it was practically on the front lines. But here's where it gets interesting. Lazenby also had strong ties to this powerful family, the Stuteville's.
Stuteville's.
Okay, refresh my memory. Big players in the whole medieval power game.
Big players is an understatement. Think huge estates, connections to the king, the whole nine yards.
Okay, so what's the connection to our Walter? Don't tell me he was secretly a long-lost Stuteville heir or something.
If only the records were that juicy. No, we haven't found a direct genealogical link yet. But it makes you wonder, how'd a relatively unknown vicar like Walter land a plum position in a Stuteville stronghold?
Pull, maybe. Like, maybe a distant relative pulled some strings.
It's possible. Or maybe he just impressed the right people with his sermons. Either way, it's a detail that makes you go, hmm.
Hmm, indeed. Okay, so, Lazenby, Scottish border, possible Stuteville connection. Where does Walter end up next on his medieval road trip?
Well, this is where things take a bit of a mysterious turn. See, the records tell us Walter became master of Illis High Hospital. Problem is, nobody knows for sure where that hospital even was.
You're kidding. A whole hospital just vanished.
Vanished from the maps. Anyway, we know hospitals back then weren't always just for, you know, treating the sick. Some were more like hostels for travelers, places for the poor.
Ah, right. Kind of a multi-purpose medieval social service center.
Exactly. So who knows what Walter was up to there? Maybe caring for the sick, maybe running a glorified inn.
Mystery of the vanished hospital. Okay, that's going on my historical to-do list. Got to find out more about that. But anyway, I'm guessing Walter's journey doesn't end there, lost to the mists of time.
Oh, not at all. We pick up his trail again, this time down south. In Sussex. 1347, there's a debt record with his name on it.
Sussex! Wow, talk about a change of scenery. He went from dodging Scottish raiders to, what, enjoying afternoon tea and crumpets?
Probably not quite. Though it does make you wonder what prompted such a drastic move. And the debt record. Well, makes you think maybe things weren't all rosy for him down south.
Ah, so maybe not tea and crumpets then. More like dodging debt collectors while trying to make ends meet.
Could be. These old records, they leave so much to the imagination.
Frustrating and fascinating all at the same time. But we're not done with Walter just yet, are we? There's one last stop on his journey, and it's a big one.
It is. By 1349, he's near London. Not just a parish priest anymore, mind you. He's involved in something much bigger, exchanging church properties. And the reason? The Hundred Years' War.
Wow. Okay, so from potentially fending off Scottish raids to getting caught up in a war with France, Walter really knew how to pick them, didn't he?
It seems that way. And his story really highlights how interconnected everything was, even back then. One minute you're a vicar in a quiet parish, the next you're caught up in international conflict.
A good reminder that history is rarely neat and tidy, right?
Never is. But Walter's story, it doesn't end with the Hundred Years' War. To see how his journey impacts the Farndale legacy, well, we need to shift our focus to the next generation. Specifically to a William Farndale. And this William, he's a study in contrasts compared to our wandering vicar.
Oh, how so? What makes William's story stand out?
So, last time we left off with a bit of a cliffhanger, this William Farndale, a stark contrast to our traveling vicar, Walter. How so? What's the big difference?
Well, Walter, he was always on the move, right? New parish, new challenge. William, on the other hand, he's all about putting down roots.
Putting down roots, huh? Sounds a bit less exciting than dodging Scottish raiders and vanishing hospitals.
Less about geographical adventures, that's for sure. But trust me, William's story is anything but boring. Remember how we were speculating about Walter maybe having a connection to those powerful Stuteville's?
Right, maybe that's how he landed that sweet gig in Lazenby.
Exactly. Well, now fast forward a generation, and where do we find William?
Don't tell me he married a Stuteville heiress and is living high on the hog. Not quite. But he does pop up in a very interesting location. Darley. Serving as a chaplain.
Darley. Okay, jog my memory. Why does that name sound familiar?
It's not too far from Caton, where, shall we say, Walter Sr. met his unfortunate end.
Oh, right. So William's back in the vicinity of where his potential grandfather was murdered. Coincidence.
It's certainly possible. Though, and it does make you wonder if those family ties, even if they were generations removed, played a role in William's path.
Maybe he'd heard stories family lore about those earlier Walters. It's like, what is it they say? You can't escape your past.
Something like that. And speaking of the past, there's another intriguing parallel between William and his potential grandfather. Remember how Walter Sr. received that pardon?
Vaguely, remind me.
It was for a death. Details a bit murky, like always. But now, guess what? William receives a pardon, too.
No way! Another Farndale pardon. What are the odds?
Right. This time it's for a death in Calley's. Also happens to be near Darley.
Okay, now that's just too much of a coincidence. Two generations, two pardons, both in roughly the same area. What were these Farndales up to?
It's like a medieval mystery novel. But sadly, those old records, they rarely give us all the answers.
Ugh, I know, right? Always leaves you wanting more. But anyway, pardon aside, didn't we say William ends up successful? What's his story?
Oh, yes. So, fast forward again to 1397. William's living in Sheriff Hutton, a prominent place, and he's clearly doing well for himself. We know this because he leaves behind a very detailed will.
Detailed? You mean like, and to my annoying neighbor, I leave a bag of beans?
Not quite. More like he outlines all his property, makes provisions for his wife, Juliana, his children, even leaves money to charity.
Okay, so this wasn't some humble country priest anymore. We're talking like landed gentry now.
Sounds about right. He definitely climbed a few rungs on that social ladder.
Incredible. From chaplain in a small parish to a man of property. Makes you wonder what happened in those intervening years, right?
It does. Did he inherit some lucky fortune? Make some shrewd land deals? Mm-hmm. Or maybe, just maybe, those potential family connections we keep talking about, the ones Walter might have tapped into, maybe they played a role in William's success.
The mysteries of the Farndale family tree. I guess some secrets we'll never know. But isn't that part of what makes this whole thing so fascinating?
Absolutely. It's like piecing together a puzzle with some pieces missing, but still getting a sense of the bigger picture. And what a picture it is. We've gone from those early Farndales, just starting to make their mark outside their namesake valley, to individuals like William, building lives of wealth and influence.
It just goes to show you never know what stories are hiding in your family tree. And we've only scratched the surface, haven't we? We still have those York merchants to explore, and of course, the Farndale line that leads to, well, some of you listening right now.
Exactly. And those stories, they're just waiting to be uncovered. So the next time you stumble across an old family name, don't just glance over it. Take a moment. Dig a little deeper. You never know what adventures, what triumphs, what scandals you might unearth. Who knows? You might even find yourself face to face with your own Walter or William, ready to share their secrets across the centuries.
Secrets, scandals, and maybe even a few hidden treasures along the way. Until next time, happy digging, everyone.